Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Don't you just love that song? We're talking about the Central Ohio housing market this hour. What's hot, what's not, and why. And the impact of the second interest rate hike by the Federal Reserve in almost a decade, I think it was yesterday. Joining us is Worthington-based realtor and owner of the CIMAC Group, Cynthia McKenzie. Welcome to the show, Cynthia.
Thanks, Ann.
And also real estate analyst and partner at Vogt Strategic Insights, Rob Vogt. Are you a partner or are you a sole proprietor now?
I'm a partner, but Okay.
And welcome back, Rob.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Thank you. And also president of Helpbringer Mortgage Services, Todd Helpbringer. Welcome back, Todd.
Good morning. Thank you.
The interest rate, let's go to the interest rate hike first of all. It was not a surprise.
Right.
We've been expecting it. But Todd, I mean, the mortgage rate, this was the second uptick, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Does it affect your business that much?
So, not, I mean, not really, because what the feds do is really always in the rear view mirror, because our rates follow the bond market, the 10-year treasuries.
Okay.
So as those got worse, and they got worse right after the election, the yields started going up. So we've already seen our rates go from 3.5 to 4.25 as of today. So bond yields have already sold off.
Did those? I thought things kind of perked up though after a couple weeks, or is it just doesn't
stock market?
Happen?
Stock okay. market did extremely well, and a lot of times the safe haven is either cash and bonds or go to the stock market. So people got out of bonds into stocks. Stock market went up. Our rates increased.
Gotcha.
It's still, you know, rates are still fantastic at 4.25. I mean, it may push some people out of the buying power they have, mm-hmm. but still at 4.25, getting a tax deduction, still a great transaction.
I mean, in some ways, Cynthia, it might force people or inspire people. It might trigger more action than that.
Yes. Oftentimes when the rate goes up a little bit, people will try to get off that fence and go buy a house because they're afraid it's going to go up and up and up. Uh-huh. And they don't want to miss the boat.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it especially true among first-time home buyers or across the board?
For first-time home buyers, I think we were talking before the show about that buyer that might have been in their house for 7 years and they're at a 3.5% fixed 30-year mortgage.
Uh-huh.
If rates go too high, like 6, 7, 8, 9, they're never giving that up.
Yeah.
We will be in trouble if it goes to 9%.
Yeah. But of course,
my first house was at 8.
My first one was around 7. And that was good then.
But Cynthia, do you see a lot of people, because I noticed it, just all of a sudden now are trying to get into contract ASAP,
mm-hmm.
because what the rates are doing, I've got to look at this house right now. I need to get in. So it spurs a little bit. I think initially things will get faster for us.
Yeah.
And if they keep going up, sure, it'll slow down. But people act on those rates and try to get into the contract quicker.
Yeah. Yep. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the housing market in Ohio with our usuals, Rob Vogt, real estate analyst for Vogt Strategic Insights, and also Todd Helpbringer of Helpbringer Mortgage Services. And joining us now, Cynthia McKenzie. She's a realtor with Keller Williams and owner of the CIMAC Group. If you have a question or comment, if you're getting ready to put your house on the market, if you're getting ready to take it off the market, if you're thinking about buying a house, if you're thinking about moving, interested in real estate in general, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Have there been the same kind of impacts on, say, commercial properties, larger, you know, multi-unit housing?
Well, there's definitely a lot of interest in multifamily commercial housing right now in Central Ohio, and I think we have probably more units in the development pipeline on the rental side than I've seen in a decade.
Mm-hmm.
It's we're seeing sites pop up. We've heard about all the sites being downtown. Those are certainly under development, and we're seeing projects in the suburbs coming up. And I guess that's really one of the things that we're trying to get our arms around is when is this millennial population who's so attracted to the rental side, when are they going to make that move into home ownership? And I would be interested to hear from Cynthia if she's seen any uptick in some of her millennial buyers over the past several months, because we still don't see it yet. We just don't see that emergence of the millennial buyer towards the home ownership market. And trying to judge when that's going to happen affects our business. It affects the real estate business. It affects mortgages. So it's a big question. And we continue to scratch our head. When is that going to happen?
Now, I know, you know, Worthington's, you know, where you specialize, of course, you'll sell, you know, anywhere, but it's kind of where you focus.
Fun fact,
yeah.
we we actually do touch all of – we had one sale in Mount Vernon this year. So
everywhere.
Exactly. For
sure. But Worthington's always an interesting case. First of all, I live there. But second of all, it's got lots of different pockets of of options. It has lots of different – everything from Colonial Hills to the super fancy spots to, you know, condos and multi-unit housing now.
It does. And I think for the millennials, they're competing with, when they are in the market, cash buyers, empty nesters, investors, and it's a rough. You have very focused to go buy a house right now. You have to be very determined, and it stinks to get beat by cash when you're a first-time home buyer.
Especially in those better neighborhoods that you're talking about, Cynthia. I think you're exactly right, because millennials have many of the same tastes as older adults do, that they want to be in these stable, good school systems.
Walkability.
Right.
Everybody wants walkability.
That's right.
But
that's
they're also more likely to change jobs and many times over their life than certainly baby boomers were. People kind of moved and wanted to stay in the same place. That's not – I mean, everything's telling us that's different. And I'm wondering if that – if you're hearing from people like, well, I don't know if I really want to do this now because I'm going to move in 2 years.
For sure. For sure. And when we have a consultation with someone, that is one of the questions. How long are you likely to stay in Columbus? And we do see the teachers that are going to stay here for a longer time, they're – that's a safe bet. They're going to be here. But people that are coming in for 2 or 3 years, especially when we saw after 2009 housing prices go down, you don't want to buy a house and then have it lose value. But we just had a client move after 2 years and their house went up in value. They were able to do it and not lose money. So it's a little safer right now as things are going up, but how long will they continue to go up?
And all I think about is the hassle.
I think
with the hassle of selling or buying or
Get their boxes unpacked in 2 years?
If you look at home values, I mean, we talk about that. You know, they're going to go up. We don't want them to go up too far too fast, because then you're going to price a bunch of people out of the market, and you know, put that in with higher rates, a bunch of people out of the market. And again, if home prices would go up, you know, 2%, 3% a year, that's nice, because if it's going to put 5 or 10%, it's going to be unrealistic. And what goes up that fast is typically going to fall.
But you know, Todd, I think if prices would accelerate a little bit faster, it would help some of the lower socioeconomic neighborhoods in Columbus, that it would bring those prices up. And I think that's one of the challenges that some homeowners in the inner city have, is that those prices aren't going up as fast as places like Worthington and Arlington. And if we saw a little bit better appreciation in some of those more upscale neighborhoods, that would translate then into some of the lower income neighborhoods that would hopefully raise their prices as well. So I think there's a good and bad to the rising prices.
I always wonder, at what point will they start going up, though? What does that neighborhood need to get it off?
Because it's been that tipping point.
Because it's been that way for so many years that. Is it more community involvement right there, getting the people to?
Well, but I think what we're beginning to see, though, is a staple neighborhood like Westgate, as an example, where the fringe of the Westgate neighborhood is actually beginning to see some improvements to it and home appreciation.
Kind of like Marion Village did after German Village.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Or Wineland Park after the Short North. So there's a lot of good examples out there of these neighborhoods beginning to come back as their surrounding neighborhoods do extremely well. So if we can kind of continue that trend, we'll continue to see improvements in these inner city neighborhoods, which I think is really important.
Katie from Columbus, you're on the air. I am told that you are a millennial and you want to buy a house.
Yes. So I live in Clintonville and I've been there for 3 years now, and we love our home, but we're about to start a family and we're planning to move to the suburbs for better schools soon. So we don't know if we should sell now when the market is hot, or if we have 2 to 3 years where we could wait so we can find something we love. And I can take my answer offline.
Okay. Thanks, Katie.
So my answer, as the realtor,
Cynthia McKenzie,
is start looking at getting your house ready to sell so that you are ready for that opportunity. Because one of the most difficult moves is that first sale to the second buy. Because you've got to try to balance, how do you finance the second one? Do you move twice? Do you own do you own two? How does that look?
Right.
And the best time to move for me, for a client, is when they are ready and when the house is ready.
Okay.
Yeah, I had a thought when you were saying that. I just lost it. I was thinking more so of the people. Like, when you say get the house ready to sell, what do you think they should do? Because I've always thought, to my mind, we've talked about this before, do a home inspection. See where your house stands. So that way you don't get someone starting to nickel and dime you on things. You already go and show your house strong.
No. Knowledge is power.
Yeah.
So there's two sides to that coin. If you give the same home inspection report to 10 different buyers, you're going to get 10 different requests for what they find is important to them. If you have 10 different home inspectors inspect your house, you may get 10 different reports. So I think with a grain of salt, you are going to find some of the big things, and nobody wants a surprise.
I thought you were going to say something like, if you do a home inspection and there is a big problem, now you have knowledge of it and you have to reveal that.
Our home inspectors are very good. They're going to find the big problems. Uh-huh. But I think some of the – if it was me and I were you getting my house ready to sell, I would start with the decluttering always first, then the unfinished projects. Then maybe get a home inspector in so there aren't any surprises.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that decluttering term is the key there.
That's it's sort the of the theme of life these days for a lot of people is just decluttering in general.
Yeah.
Particularly with baby boomers are sort of that sandwich generation. So they still have the clutter of their own life and they're decluttering their parents and that kind of a thing. It's top of mind for a lot of people right now.
Well, we have accumulated a lot of stuff over the years. All of us, and especially us baby boomers, have done a really really bad job at accumulating things.
Yeah, we're junk collectors.
Open the garage, right?
Yeah. Don't buy another table. It's just someplace to put stuff. We will continue our conversation. We're talking about the housing market in the Central Ohio area. We're going to talk about maybe what the impact of a new administration in the White House might have on the housing boom that we're experiencing in Central Ohio right now. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News. Join us at noon for fresh air and the prescription drug epidemic. That's from noon until 1.
As Donald Trump shapes his new administration, a new team of leaders gears up for Washington.
We've learned something this morning about President-elect Trump's choice for Secretary of Defense.
Ben Carson is the President-elect's choice to run the Department of Housing
and Urban
Development.
Donald Trump has richly rewarded his campaign CEO, Steve Bannon, with an appointment.
Follow what happens as America transitions. Listen every day.
On 89.7 NPR News.
First published in 1971 and still considered one of the most influential political tracts of the times, Diet for a Small Planet remains relevant in both its regard for the environment and devotion to great eating. We hear from the author. That's coming up Friday on All Sides with Ann Fisher from 10 to noon on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Sherrington Group, financial planners and investment managers providing financial advice and client-focused solutions to help grow and preserve clients' wealth. The Sherrington Group, planning for success, managing for life at sherringtongroup.com.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. If you're looking to buy or sell in the spring, or maybe you have to do it this winter, now is the time to plot your strategy. Still with us, President of Helpbringer Mortgage Services, Todd Helpbringer. Also, real estate analyst and partner at Vogt Strategic Insights, Rob Vogt, and Worthington-based realtor and owner of the SIMAT Group, Cynthia McKenzie. Questions, comments, get the call, get on the phone, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know, the Dispatch reported that Obetz is the hottest market in Central Ohio. Home sales were up almost 80% over the same period last year. And Obetz is spending $50 million to buy an athletic stadium to host professional lacrosse and rugby. I had their city manager on a couple weeks ago. They're just like raring to go. What do you make of that? I mean, is it the it suburb now or what? Rob?
I think that's probably all relative, Anne. Certainly, Obetz has a lot of positive attributes. Its location, proximity to downtown, the fact that it's on the outer belt, it makes it easy to get in and out of. Home prices are extremely affordable there.
Fully employed. Everybody
They've
has
got
a job.
A lot of good, significant employers there that generates a great tax base. So they've, you know, that's always been one of the long-term strategies of every community is to try to attract more employers, industrial users. Chasing smokestacks has kind of gone away, but Obetz has done a pretty good job at attracting those types of tax generators. And so they've got money now to play with, so they're going to promote their community.
Do they have that mix that Dublin's trying to make up for now in terms of housing stock?
You know, I think Obetz recognizes that it will never be a Dublin or New Albany.
Of course not.
I think it's a very stable, affordable alternative on the South End. I think it's perceived as a safe community, and I think that attracts both younger buyers who's looking for a safe area and also older adults.
Okay. Let's take a call. Roger in Dublin, you're on the air. Hi, Roger.
Hi. This is a question for Todd. In that just a few years ago, we had a huge financial crisis brought on by the banks, and there's a lot of regulations put in. But now the new administration, there's a lot of talk that they're going to take away a lot of those regulations. And don't you think that's just going to get us back in the same mess as we were in before?
Todd, you're very conservative during the – as far as prudent during the recession. You did not like what was going on with the mortgage industry.
Right.
What do you think?
Well, hopefully that we learn from our mistakes and they don't get back into lending money to people that can't afford homes. I think that's an easy one. I will say it would be refreshing to have less rules and regulations that we have for the
sure,
clients
but
that are high credit quality.
Okay.
Because those people, from what I know in our industry, what we've gone through, it is a crazy amount of paperwork we need to get on those clients. And those clients weren't the clients that brought us, quote, to our knees. It was, you know, I'll go back to the time of when Greenspan and Clinton started the Homeownership Act. Mm-hmm. That Homeownership Act could have been a good act if it had some structure to it. There was no structure. It was just make up loan products for people versus having people conform to the loan product.
Mm-hmm.
As long as we don't get back to that, I think reducing some of the rules and regulations is a great thing.
Yeah.
So are you talking, Todd, about being selective on which rules and regulations you would change?
Because that can be a problem.
Yeah.
No, I think documenting income and assets is where you have to go. It's just when they got into the silly lending, where they were letting people do like the no income loans or no asset loans or basically no income, no asset, no employment loans. When you're basically doing liar loans, you can't do those things because people want to get into the homes. And that they'll do anything to get into the homes. The bad thing that I never understood is that these people that want to get in these properties, they saw the mortgage payment 10 or 15 times. How do they not know they couldn't afford this?
Yeah.
So I think the rules, I agree, you can't go willy-nilly on the rules. But I think taking away financing and just making it where they have four or five products, 30-year fix, 20-year fix, 15-year fix, I don't think adjustable rates are necessary. Most people don't spend a lot of time on their interest rates. They know it's fixed for 30 years, keep paying it, and move on. Just make it simple.
But Todd, you know, the example you talked about, though, that the fact that people realize they can't afford what they were buying back in those days, what kind of responsibility were the lenders taking on to fight that?
Yeah, none.
A lot of times it was people who were first-time homeowners, sometimes people who were first in their families ever to own a home.
No, I agree, Robert. You're saying, I think we all have a fiduciary responsibility for our clients' best interest. And unfortunately, at that period of time, people were turning a blind eye to that, and they were just worried about the profit. I mean, there were people boasting in the mortgage industry how much money they were making on clients that couldn't afford these homes.
Right.
That's appalling. It's our responsibility to help people and provide them with housing, understand the hits the payment per month.
Well, let's hope you lenders become more responsible, right?
I'm happy to do that.
Zach in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Zach.
Hi, and I just moved to Columbus from Dayton, or I'm trying to move from Dayton, and I just got a job up here, and I can't find a place to live. I've been looking around left and right. If I find an apartment that I can afford, the minute I find it, it's gone the next day.
Wow. What is your range, if you don't mind my asking?
I mean, I'm looking somewhere probably between the $500 and $1,000 range, and I mean, that's pushing it at times, so...
Yeah. You'd like the 500 because you want to sock some money away. The 1,000 you can actually afford.
Yeah, I'd like to be a homeowner at some point.
Yeah, exactly.
Rob. And I think, you know, one of the challenges for a renter like this is that for the product that he might be looking at $500 is probably not exactly where he wants to be.
Absolutely.
Certainly with the addition of product that we've got under construction that's coming online, it's going to help with that. Some of the argument is that by putting in more product into the market than what can be absorbed, we may see some rent costs coming down. But the long-term view that we have is that rental is going to be a preferred housing alternative for quite some time, and that even though we've got this product coming online, it probably isn't going to be enough to satisfy all the demand. I saw an interesting statistic the other day that Pew Research Foundation had done and said that 32% of millennials 18 to 34 are still living at home. 32%. I looked at the numbers today. That represents about 140,000 millennials who are still living with parents. Imagine when those folks make a decision to move, right, and their first move is going to be into an apartment. It's likely not going to be buying a house. So you can see that we're going to continue to have this long vision of demand that's going to continue to exasperate the problem that this gentleman's talking about. We just don't have enough apartments to serve the ongoing demand that we expect. So,
is it the ongoing demand, or is it then their debt load?
What do you mean?
They can't afford it because maybe let's say student loan debt, mm-hmm, credit card debt, car leases.
Well, it sounded like he was had things.
Not
yeah.
him, most, but more of your
yeah.
The millennials still living at home.
No question. No question that student debt is a big issue and how that affects their long-term opportunities. But the reality is, even if we didn't have the student debt, it seems like the concept of renting is an acceptable alternative. And, you know, we've heard some comments about the new administration that we want to promote home ownership. And no offense to Cynthia in terms of the real estate industry, but, you know, if we look closely at what folks, millennials in particular, want, it isn't necessarily home ownership, and they want to be renters for a while because of the flexibility that offers. So,
you know, one thing I wanted to ask Zach, and he hung up, but is where is he looking, you know, in Columbus? Because that is a big determinant. Cynthia, I know you don't deal in rentals per se, but you know what's out there. Mm-hmm. Any ideas for Zach?
Oh, gosh, it's going to probably have to be an actual apartment building. And it's probably going to have to be in one of the outskirt neighborhoods. Single family in Worthington, 1,000 square feet, is going to be about 1,400.
Right.
So I do dabble in that.
Yeah.
Those apartments behind Worthington Square, what are those?
Yeah, those are higher.
What are they running anyways?
I don't.
They're new.
I would have to guess.
Okay.
But I feel like 15 to 2,000.
Oh wow!
Yeah, we're not seeing any new market rate apartments coming online that's less than $1,100 or $1,200 mm-hmm. a month. It's tough to find. And that's really, you know, one of the challenges is providing affordable housing choices in Central Ohio. It's not only in Ohio, but not only in Columbus, but across Ohio. It's a real challenge right now.
So the developers, why are they not getting into that market? I mean, because
there's no money in it.
I was going to say, dude.
I wanted him to say that.
Money.
So how do we solve that problem?
Yeah.
Because every time we talk about this, you know, the
someone has to be able to start somewhere.
Right. We could keep on saying it's no money, but
and the foreclosure, you know, plague of foreclosures, the demand for rental went up.
If you need it, they will build it. They did build it.
But
there simply aren't a lot of programs out there right now to promote affordable housing, both on the for rent side and on the ownership side, especially, again, in the neighborhoods where folks want to live. Yeah. Downtown there's virtually no affordable housing right now, and in fact there's a proposal to even remove some of the existing apartments and rebuild those as brand new apartments. The Library South project adjacent to the new renovated library. There's a proposal out to take away those units on Washington
All those
Street.
Brick?
Yeah, yeah.
I love those.
Yeah, those are.
I love looking at them.
Right.
Maybe they're too old to renovate.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
But it is a challenge right now, a real challenge.
Does
to find
the city have much of a commitment on paper to provide affordable housing?
They will bend over backwards to assist developers. The problem is they just don't have a lot of tools in the tool chest right now to help with that process. They can assist with a variety of things, but it just isn't a very big toolbox.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the housing market, as you can tell. If you just tuned in, my guests, Cynthia McKenzie of Keller Williams, owners of the CIMAC Group, and also Rob Vogt, real estate analyst with Vogt Strategic Insights, and Todd Helpbringer, president of Helpbringer Mortgage Services. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I guess Motorists Insurance Group is the one interested in the developing the area near the library. And that's meeting some kind of need. But I imagine if they're tear down and rebuild something that's going to fit whatever zoning requirements they'll have, and I imagine they're going to be pretty strict.
Right. Yeah.
It's not going to be affordable.
No, it will not be affordable.
Who wouldn't love to live in that neighborhood?
We're seeing a lot of changes in the Discovery District right now, and I think that's probably going to be one of the up-and-coming neighborhoods. There's also been similar announcements in Franklinton. There's probably four projects right now being discussed that'll add probably over 1,000 units into that neighborhood. So even though we've got these proposals out there, it isn't even coming close to the affordable side.
Right, right. Makira in Worthington, did I pronounce your name right?
Hi, Ian.
Hi.
How are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good. Yeah, just cold here, but it's good.
Oh, well, you know.
Yeah. So I have a comment, and just to your panel on this discussion. You know, me and my wife, we're falling in that category. We're considered millennium.
Uh-huh.
You know, it took us at least 2 years to find what we really like. And I think one of the things, and I think probably your panel already know this, or you probably already echo that point, is, you know, there's a certain attraction that we're looking, like, okay, close to the city, walkability, you know, like Worthington, the great things about Worthington, the fresh market, that's just like was one of the attractions. That you could walk up in the morning and just go to fresh market and get some goodies and you know, so things like those, you know, and if we have more of those neighborhood, those more community, mm-hmm. sort of like that set of things, it would be really fantastic, you know, and I think that will bring a lot of millennium to the side of want to own the houses, you know, and maybe we are just one of those exception ones. Like we like the responsibility of owning the house, you know, it comes with a lot of responsibility. But yeah.
Well, welcome, and thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep. Yeah,
I think all sectors like the walkability, and you know, we'll have people move in from out of state. And maybe they're an empty nester. They're attracted to Clintonville. They're attracted to Grandview. They're attracted to Worthington. They want that walkable to downtown. I do think Powell's done a really nice job of bringing more walkability to their neighborhoods. Dublin, of course, has all the bike trails.
Right.
And so it's not just the millennials that want walkability. It's retirees. Okay. It's
baby
I want
boomers.
It. Yeah.
No question. It's also interesting to see developers are recognizing this, Ann, that, you know, look at what MI Homes is doing with Minerva Park Golf Course.
Yeah.
You know, they recognize the fact that folks want to be closer to the city. They want to be close to a lot of amenities. Minerva Park Golf Course is perfect for that. And I would imagine
they want to play golf.
Well, not anymore. It's gone.
It's gone. Right.
But you know, they recognize how important it is to kind of create that environment, the walkability factor. And I think you'll see more and more of those types of developments, although we really don't have many sites left within 270 that you can take advantage of something like that. But that caller was clearly identified the key aspects. Walkability is very important.
Yeah, everyone wants that now. It's just going to take time for us to build those communities out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just takes time.
Nikki in Gahanna, you're on the air. Hi, Nikki.
Hi, good morning. How are you all?
Fine, thanks.
Long-time listener. Question
thanks.
Is, I live in Gahanna, and me and my husband were currently looking for houses and looking at the rental properties as well. They're just as much, if not more. Can you explain to me why, like, example, Clark State Road, there's a house for $1,750. It's 3 bedrooms, 2 baths. Not really much of a difference than any of the houses, like, on the west side of Gahanna, but just as much more if I wanted to buy a house. Can you explain to me or anybody tell me why that's why they have the option to make it more?
You mean the rental payment is so much more than if you would actually buy it?
Well, I mean, that might be – you can get into that renting probably with a security deposit versus owning is a down payment. So they're probably competing against that and saying, look, you can – rent for me right now, pay $1,750, go out and buy it, but you have to have a down payment. There's a different structure there. So they're able to maybe raise the rents on that. Hmm. Make sense?
Everyone agree?
Yeah.
Okay, Nikki, thanks a lot for that call. How long can this growth continue? What do the census numbers tell us about how long when the next blip comes?
Well, it's hard to have that crystal ball out there, and no question. I think the strong suit that Central Ohio has is jobs. We continue to generate a lot of jobs, and that's what's attracting households to Central Ohio. Right now, there's a study that's looking at the 2050 plan that is forecasting the long-term implications of all this household growth that's occurring. I don't think anybody has that ability to forecast exactly when our next recession is going to occur. But even if that does occur, even if we have something in every, 4 or 5 years is a typical cycle for recessions, that the long-term growth outlook for Central Ohio is extremely strong.
You know, but the last recession was just hung so deeply on the housing market. Now, Governor Kasich has said we're heading into another recession, but that's not housing related. That's a big difference, right, Todd?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the housing, so it did take us down further, but it was the worst recession since the Depression. So I think you have to take that one out of the equation because it built up for years on housing, and housing controls so much because if they're not buying, then they may be remodeling. So it's affecting all the big box companies. So I think when housing does well or rates are competitive or underwriting guidelines are consistent, it's all going to be well. But yeah, you have to go ups and downs. It's just, I think being more consistent, like we talked earlier, 2-4% appreciation a year. I mean, that's my crystal ball. But again, I know people don't want that. People want the home runs and they want to make $100,000 on their house and this doesn't always work out.
You know, though, Ann, the comment that the governor made, though, about the recession, I think does bring to light a very important issue, and that is this bifurcation of income levels that folks have. You know, the folks who are doing well are doing very well, and the folks that aren't doing well aren't doing well at all. Mm-hmm. And because of the income diversification, you know, we can see where some of the problems exist in terms of the inner city locations and buying homes and being able to qualify for loans and paying the rents and so on, that that component, and no matter where you are on the fence, a lot of those folks simply aren't being addressed in terms of affordability and options.
And I'm wondering, I keep thinking back to Zach, who called, who wants to move here, is moving here from Dayton. Mm-hmm. He has a job. Somebody hired him. But do companies, how much they think about where they're going to put people? How do you attract people in that income range who haven't accumulated the resources to buy and are looking for a decent place to live, too?
Well, I think that, you know, it's one of the reasons I think that we need to continue to promote the idea of transportation options in Central Ohio, that this will open up a lot of different communities to tie themselves into downtown. You know, we've heard about the rapid transit line along Cleveland Avenue. We've heard about potential tram on North High Street. We've talked about light rail systems and so on. I think Central Ohio really, if it wants to continue to make itself great, it has to continue to promote those kinds of concepts, and that will lessen the importance of walkability. The fact that you could get on a tram in Clintonville and go downtown all of a sudden makes that a walkable community. Mm-hmm. So I think
you don't have to worry about parking.
That's right.
So that makes maybe what you can afford to spend on an apartment.
That's right.
A lot more.
There's a lot more options for you at that point. Yeah. So I think it's one of the things we really need to start stressing is finding some transportation solutions in Central Ohio.
We're going to continue our conversation about the housing market in Central Ohio in the winter. It is now winter, as you've noticed. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can check out our Facebook page and post a question or comment there if you want. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Thanks for joining us this morning on 89.7 NPR News. In just about 20 minutes, fresh air begins. And a high of 12 degrees for today.
In 2011, the CDC declared a prescription drug epidemic, the result of doctors over-prescribing painkillers to patients. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Dr. Anna Lemke about her new book, Drug Dealer MD. It's about how well-meaning doctors can prescribe pills that kill their patients and how patients can become addicted to pills meant to save their lives. Join us.
Today at noon on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, calls grow to abolish the Electoral College and for electors to vote their conscience. We'll take on the Electoral College question. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
This afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News.
Support comes from Columbus iWorks in the Short North Arts District. The team at Columbus iWorks provides a range of optometric services, eye exams, contact lenses, eyewear, and treatment of eye diseases, and welcomes flex spending dollars and insurance benefits before year end. Details online at columbusiworks.com.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about trends in real estate markets in the Central Ohio area. Still with us, President of Helpbringer Mortgage Services, Todd Helpbringer. Also, real estate analyst and partner at Vogt Strategic Insights, Rob Vogt, and Worthington-based realtor and owner at the SIMAC Group, Cynthia McKenzie. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you could email us at allsides@wosu.org. Cynthia, how much do home sales slow during the winter months? I suppose this is like the slowest month of the year because of the holidays, right?
Right. I don't think they would slow much this year if people would put their houses on the market.
Okay.
I still think there's lots of people, buyers, looking for homes. There's just less to look at, so the home sales slow.
So if you do have to list in the winter this time of year, it's not as bad as it has been in past. Because a lot of times people are like, hey, I don't want to look for a house until the spring or something.
Right,
but
right.
Now they're desperate.
Absolutely. There's definitely more buyers in the market in March, April, May. There's a little bit of a frenzied atmosphere. So
yeah.
I would not discourage anyone to put their house on the market at this time of year.
Is there anything special for this season that somebody should do if they're going to put their house on the market during the holidays, for example?
Declutter.
But that's the big picture.
Right? We're always trying to declutter.
Yeah. A lot of people have their homes decorated this time
right,
of year.
Right. And I think if you were going to put your house on the market for this time of year, less decorations, a little bit more toned down, but I would still decorate. You still have to live. And we put a house on the market in 12, and it was very interesting because we put it on the market December 14th, 2012. And I thought, well, I don't know if this is going to go very well. We had three showings, three offers, and it literally looked like Williamsburg Christmas threw up all over the house. And it still sold.
Sounds like my house.
Yeah. But I think that's when I felt like the market had truly recovered, because those three buyers that made those three offers all had failed to buy a house during that summer. They were all leftover buyers.
Okay.
So.
Isn't that been almost the whole year this year? We've had lack of inventory.
Leftovers.
There's been, how many homes have you listed that you've had multiple offers same day?
A lot.
Yeah. And that's not norm for our industry. Usually there's more, more product out there.
Yeah. Right.
And a little bit more time than a week.
Exactly.
Or 48 hours.
And I think one of the problems that people don't think about, as a seller, you're super excited to get a lot of offers. But a lot of those buyers need a little bit of time to process, maybe see the house a second time, and they're not given that opportunity to really think through their decision. And it's just crazy madness. And it would be nice if we had, the perfect supply.
Let's see. Joe in Columbus, you're on the air. You live in the Hilltop.
Yeah. You said Joe?
Yeah.
Yep, thank you. First time, long time. I just wanted to report on some of the experience that I had over the last month. I was a renter in Grandview Heights, paying $900 a month, renting a condo with two bedrooms and a roommate. And at the end of the year, my landlord was going to sell. He gave me right of first refusal, but I started looking around Columbus anyway, just using Zillow and Realtor.com.
Mm-hmm.
I found a three-bedroom, two-bath, three-car garage with an upstairs shop, lower-level finished walkout on a half-acre with three parcels and four lots on a corner lot across from Glenview Park, up the street from a rec center on two bike paths.
Wow.
Minutes from downtown. I made an offer, about $130,000. My mortgage payment, which I'm sending off today for January 1, is $906. And so I'm feeling pretty incredibly lucky, but also it took a little bit of planning. The whole deal was done for about $5,000, and I took about $2,700 to closing. So, you know, add in an inspection and appraisal with that stuff, and it started to bring the price up a little bit. But seriously, $5,000 in total, with only about $2,700 down, and I've got 1,500 square feet of living space, a three-car garage with a shop upstairs, just an incredible property. So pretty lucky, but I do think that with a little bit of planning, a few resources, and by that I mean a few thousand dollars backed up, someone who's 29 years old like me looking to buy, do your planning, but mm-hmm. you'll be able to find something that's going to suit your needs and meet all of the criteria. Yeah. For transportation and food and proximity to downtown and living space, et cetera.
I'll tell you, you have a home run there. And I think you brought up a good point. You know, prepare yourself. And no matter what it is, it's about preparation. Whether you want to apply for a loan, get in there, talk to your person to see if you qualify. Or if you're looking for homes, get online or talk to a realtor. I think preparation is key in all aspects. So congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations,
Thank
Joe.
You very much.
That's so exciting
right now,
to have
I'm
your first house.
Thank you. I hear the ads with Quicken saying that, you know, you can refinance at 4.5 or 4.75. And I'm thinking, you know, that's incredible because I was still able to get 3.5 locked in for 30 years.
Yep.
Good for you.
Congratulations.
It's so exciting.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You
Great
bet.
Show. I look forward to listening.
Thanks. That is an exciting moment,
yeah.
I have to say. Frank in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Frank.
Hello. I just wanted to mention about, like, electric utility that I've read a lot about and studied, where through deregulation with the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, to answer your question earlier, why are they building so many apartments? There was a gentleman from the past, you probably will, I don't need to mention his name, you'll know who it is. He said, follow the money, follow the money. So when you own an apartment complex, 500 apartments, and you have a private electric utility that is unregulated, you make money long-term off of that. And that's something I think the legislature is working on. There was an article in the Dispatch, but it's just like we got to be careful as a government. The government is there, I think, to protect us, and I don't think we're being protected. There's all these loopholes, and I think that's why we're seeing a certain amount of apartment going up. I own some rentals. I have like a private water metering in my unit, but I don't charge a premium. There's just a couple dollar fee to, you know, mail out the bill. And, you know, there's a company that comes and reads it for me, but I don't charge an extra per gallon. And I don't know if you want to comment on that or
okay.
I just want the word to be, you know,
okay.
spread.
Do you see
beware.
That? Do you see that a lot, Rob, where people bring it to the street? And then the owners will then
Developers recognize there are a variety of income sources
right.
that you can get, whether it's income from the washer and dryer in the laundry room or whatever.
Yeah.
These are potential opportunities
is
for income streams.
Is he talking about they're charging a premium for – they're charging on top of what they're paying for the
utilities? He's talking about the owner of the property doing a mass meter of individual units. So they
right.
send that – they add a premium to the electric bill.
But they
for
say
each
it's
owner.
Just built into your rental.
Sometimes they are, but sometimes you get a separate electric bill.
Okay.
So some folks are saying, wait a minute, if I pay one fee, if I didn't live at this apartment, I would be paying AEP directly and it would be a lower rate. And I think that's a valid point. That's
right.
And it's something people should check on
absolutely.
When they are going to rent.
That's right.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot with some of the apartment complex on our commercial side where they'll bring it to the street and then that owner will then take it and then have a
I had not
an upcharge
heard about
or
that.
Premium. Oh, yeah.
I figured it was kind of happening if they build it into the rent But okay. Frank, thanks a lot for that call. That's an interesting issue. Khalid in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Khalid.
Yes, hello. Good morning, and thank you for the program.
Sure.
We've been renting for 7 years, living in the same house. Last year, we thought we might be able to move because we can pay the mortgage, but we didn't have the down payment.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to get advantage of the program that government will pay the down payment.
The first time home buyer thing.
Yes, yes. So I went there and I took the course to be approved for that. But after that, I found out that my lender said that the interest rate will go up 1% on the loan. So when I calculate that, it comes to like maybe 8-10 times the down payment that they will give us. So kind of like that stop us from going forward. So I wanted to ask if this is a standard thing or he's just it's just this lender or what's going on at that point.
Yeah, we really don't do a lot of that at my company. The first time home buyer, the product out there that some will go to a bank maybe and do. So I know in the past they've always had a premium to them in some capacity, whether it be rate or private mortgage insurance, because they feel there's a little bit more risk involved. Mm-hmm. But you might want to chop around a little bit for that because it has to be fully disclosed. The one good thing about all the regulations that we have now is that lenders that don't disclose up front, if they don't do that, there are so many penalties from the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau that it really has cleaned up our industry from the bait and switch. So if someone is putting something in writing to him, he can take that to the bank because it cannot change.
And he should shop around,
absolutely,
shouldn't he?
Yeah, at least go talk to two or three people.
Yeah.
And I'll say with that is when you do that, there's no reason to have everyone pull your credit because we as lending can say, let's assume you have a credit score of 740. Everyone do the same assumption and put in front of him what you can offer. Because if I pull, Rob pulls, Cindy pulls, everyone pulls his credit, his score could fall down. And that doesn't benefit him.
Why does that happen?
But they have basically called inquiries. So when you have inquiries on your credit, the repositories don't know how much credit you've actually applied for. So your score starts to drop down. So finally, when you decide to go to lender, let's say C or D, your score may have dropped 20 or 30 points. And if you're on the cusp, it could be a higher interest rate for you. So I always tell people, just everyone work with the assumption that you have a certain credit score, have us show you what you can offer, then let them make a decision.
Todd, is there a source of lenders listing someplace that somebody like this caller could go to someplace?
Yeah. Better Business Bureau of Lenders?
That or even, I mean, I hate to say, Google, first-time home buyer, Central Ohio Lending, and there should be a list of people come up. It was OFA that, Cindy, you know?
Oh, no.
No.
I was just going to say, also, if you're working with a realtor, they usually have good recommendations.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Again, part of all this whole planning thing. Mm-hmm. And get a realtor.
Yes.
Yeah. Khalid, good luck with that. Hope you're a first-time home buyer by the next time you hear this show. John in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, John.
Hi. I live near a very large park, many acres. But within a mile, there are no grocery stores or really shops of any sort. If you've got a car and you're willing to go a mile and a half, there are tons of options in every direction. But it's kind of a desert right here in terms of local walkability. Have you ever heard, any of your guests, of taking a park and below your soccer fields and your baseball diamonds, building a shopping center? Is that an option? Has anyone done that?
Huh.
I imagine that the city probably owns that park and residents would scream bloody hell if somebody decided to take somebody's public park and turn it into a shopping center for
or
the benefit
even if it
of
was
a developer.
Underneath it,
yeah,
even if
I don't see anything like that happening. I would think that'd be impossible.
But the basic concept, though, of putting like shops and stuff underneath parking structures, not in the underground, but doing
floor,
that kind of a thing, trying
stuff,
to use that space in a more
that would be a very expensive project, but I suppose it could be done.
Okay. Sorry, John. Let's see. One thing I wanted to ask you, Cynthia, is about staging.
Yes.
A lot of people are addicted to HGTV now, and the staging thing's a really big deal. It looks like it must be expensive and a bit super hassle. Are there some people you say, you know what, you really need to stage this, and other people you're like, nah, it's perfect the way it is? No.
That's a great question. I think most people have enough things in their house that we can work with what they already have and maybe bring in a couple items. There are vacant houses that when the market was slower, we definitely wanted to stage so that they would stand out.
Yeah.
But there's no good rule of everyone should stage and everyone shouldn't.
Okay.
It's really a house by house call.
Okay. And do you do that or are there staging companies?
There are staging companies. You can actually rent furniture. There's a ton of good staging companies within Columbus. You also, there's a woman that does quite a good business called Ready, Set, Sell. And she'll come in and give you a consultation of what you can use, where you should put things.
Oh.
And that's really helpful for sellers.
Okay. We just have a couple minutes left. And an email from Aries wanted you guys to talk about the Dublin Riverside development and what you think. He said, living in Dublin and seeing it every day fills me with dread. Seems the opposite of walkable, but I may be missing something.
I think he should probably wait to see how it finishes itself out. I've heard some really positive things about it. They've got some good retailers coming in, great restaurants, bars.
Yeah.
They've got residential units under construction. I've heard that some of the million-dollar condominiums that were that are being built on the west side of that project are sold out at this point. So there's a lot of interest in it. So I think I would recommend that they wait to see the finished product and how it fits within the community.
Because you're not going to stop it now.
That's right. No, that's right.
But
yeah, give it a chance.
Yeah, give it a chance. Right.
What about the price points there? Pretty steep,
expensive.
Aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, very expensive.
Yeah, it's
Dublin. Not affordable.
It's not affordable. So close, though.
Affordable. Yeah. And then, we're just about out of time. I better say, I'm not going to do that where I ask you the last question and then rush everybody to answer. I'm going to be organized today. Rob Vogt, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. It was fun.
Appreciate it. Rob Vogt, he's a real estate analyst and partner in Vogt Strategic Insights. And also Todd Helpbringer, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
Todd Helpbringer, president of Helpbringer Mortgage Services. And also Cynthia McKenzie, new to our panel. Thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
Cynthia McKenzie is realtor with Keller Williams and owner of the CIMAC Group. Thanks for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.